Blog Talk Radio.
This is the PFS Global Support Podcast. Our mission is to provide support, guidance, and coping strategies for men afflicted with the condition known as post-finasteride syndrome. While this is a new condition, medical research is currently working to find out more about this syndrome and hopefully a cure. The podcast, its listeners, and the victims of PFS would also like to reach out to Merck Pharmaceuticals. They are the manufacturers of finasteride, and we believe they have an ethical and moral obligation to help the men damaged by their drug. Donations can be made to the PFS Foundation, which is not affiliated with this podcast. The PFS Global Support Podcast is an independent production of men afflicted by PFS. The PFS Foundation is a 501c not-for-profit corporation, and donations made to the foundation are tax-deductible. Visit pfsfoundation.org for more information. And now, on to the show with your host, Adam Held.
Welcome to PFS Global Support. This is Adam, your host, and we're quickly approaching our 30th episode, our 30th story, which unfortunately is 30 too many, but Michael is going to be joining us to talk about his story. If you have questions, you're listening to the show, and you want to call in, the number to call is 718-508-9136. And also, if you're listening and you're in a bad spot, just know that research has been completed at Harvard University and is filled but not yet completed at Baylor University, in addition to a PFS study that's taking place in Italy. So we currently have three studies that will be published in the next 2 years to help elucidate the cause of this syndrome. So just have hope, and I'm going to bring Michael in the air. Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Adam. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. I'm just going to let you talk. I'd like to hear what life was like for you before you started Propecia, especially with regards to your health.
Yeah. You know, truthfully, in the period immediately leading up to taking Propecia was, it was probably one of the best times of my life. I guess to explain that, I should probably go back a little ways. I should say also, first off, I forgot to mention at the beginning, probably don't need to say this, but I have pretty profound cognitive impairments, so my speech is probably going to sound labored every once in a while. But if anything's unclear, please just jump in and ask me to clarify, but do the best I can with explaining everything. Anyhow, as I said, I think I should probably go back a few years. I graduated from college in 2007, and as people here in the United States know, that was one of the worst, economic times in recent history. So I had spent the previous 3 years really trying to enter the book publishing industry in New York City. I lived in Connecticut at the time, and I was regularly making. I didn't live in an area of Connecticut that was particularly close to New York. I was regularly making 5-hour round trip commutes back and forth between New York and Connecticut. I had several internships. I was working temp jobs. I had freelance gigs and whatnot, and all trying to build a career in editorial in the book publishing industry. Anyway, 3 years of all of that, really working pretty tirelessly. I finally got a job in 2010, particularly or specifically October of 2010. I was working as an editorial assistant with a well-known book publisher in the city, in New York, and things were really good. It was really the culmination of several years of effort there, and I was really happy where I was and what I had achieved. As far as health, I was in almost perfect health. There's really nothing significant that was going on. I've had irritable bowel syndrome since I was, like a teenager, but it's very minimal and something that I had gotten completely under control up to that time. And I had really nothing to complain about. I was very healthy at the time, and as I explained there, things were good for me in other ways too.
So things are good. You're healthy physically. You said no major issues, nothing, no major depression, no major depressive issues, anything like that.
No, No, nothing like that.
And sex life, how was your sex life at that point?
There wasn't a whole lot going on in that regard at that point. I, you know, as I said, I had spent the previous 3 years, you know, really focusing on my career. But, I mean, there were...
But everything,
you know,
worked?
I had a partner a couple, like a year or two before, a long-term partner, and, you know, things were, you know, things were fine. I was completely healthy in that regard.
Okay, and libido was fine. It was just more you were busy than anything.
Yeah, it was. There was nothing wrong with me at all. Yeah, it was just I had chosen to sort of focus professionally at that point. But I was really looking forward to, you know, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was really looking forward to sort of, you know, jumping into the dating pool. I was, you know, living in a new city. I was meeting a lot of new people. You know, here I was, I had a good job and all of that. You know, I was really looking forward to meeting people and you know, dating and all of that. So it was, you know, something that was going to happen for me very soon, no doubt about that.
So take us to the point where you decided to go to, I assume you went to a doctor to talk about your hair loss?
Yeah, I had been losing my hair for several years prior and hadn't really done much about it. But, yeah, I saw a dermatologist at the time who went and prescribed me Propecia. I should say that I had taken the drug... I've taken the drug a few times over the last several years. Actually, now that I think about it, it had been quite a while since I'd ever touched the drug. I should go back. This was in 2010, as I said, we're talking about now. I started losing my hair probably when I was about 20, 21. That was like 2005 or so. I had tried the drug initially way back then. I think not for more than a day or two. But I had pretty significant sexual issues to begin with almost immediately after taking the drug and immediately stopped it way back then in my early 20s and, you know, didn't touch it again for several years. But I guess, you know, obviously this is just so stupid in retrospect, but I decided a bunch of years later to try it again. I thought maybe that, you know, I was older at that point, maybe my body had changed. You know, I didn't really understand the mechanism of how Propecia worked. I also had read, I think somewhere that, if reducing the dosage might have some kind of positive effect as far as alleviating side effects or minimizing side effects. So I did try to do that, I think in 2010. Listen, it was a stupid decision. And I obviously trusted that, you know, this drug being on the market, wouldn't cause any sort of long-term permanent side effects. You know, fortunately, I was wrong about that. And as I said previously, you know, when I had taken the drug years earlier, actually, I don't know if I said this, but things immediately resolved after stopping taking the drug.
What were some of those symptoms the first time you took it?
The first time, way back then, it was just sexual. It was erectile dysfunction, pretty much.
Gotcha.
There wasn't really anything noticeable. I don't think I took it long enough really to notice anything else. But things snapped, you know, immediately right back into place, and I had no lasting effects. So I, you know, I figured if I did try it again, you know, anything were to happen, everything would snap back into place like it once did.
Right, and then that's what was on the label too. It said that on the label, so you had no reason to believe otherwise. So you start taking it again the second time. When did you first notice? How long were you taking it before you noticed things were different?
It was very soon. I was taking a reduced dosage. I don't remember if it was maybe half the regular dosage or maybe a quarter. I don't recall exactly, but I know I was splitting the pills. By the way, if anybody listening, it does no good to split pills. I learned later that Propecia has a finasteride has a it's what's called a flat response. It's what's called a flat response
right.
drug, meaning that, I'm sure you know this, but meaning that it doesn't really matter how much you reduce it. It's going to have the same effect on your body. So basically one-fourth of a milligram is the same as one full milligram. So that you know, it's just scientifically doesn't make any sense to do that. I'm sorry, what was your
Michael,
question?
We have someone that wants to ask a question or talk for a second. Are you comfortable with that, or do you want...
That's
is that okay?
Completely fine with me. Yeah.
Okay, so 720, I am bringing you on the line. Hello, 720?
Hi.
Hi, what's your name?
Eddie.
Eddie.
Hi, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm good. You're talking to Michael and I, both PFS victims. What do you got for us?
Actually, I took it for 1 month back in 2013, and I just got paranoid. Not because of the drug. I just got paranoid, and I said, you know what? I've been scammed many times in my life, and I said to myself, you know what? I'm not going to even take the chance. And then about 8 months later, accidentally on YouTube, I found all these horror stories, and I just thank. I'm not too religious, but this is probably the one time in my life I believe in God, and I said, thank God this didn't become me. You know what I mean?
Michael, I think both of us would love to have that scenario in our lives.
I wish that was my experience. Yeah.
Yeah, and
is that all you had, Eddie? I mean, we're very happy for you.
I just had a question for you, Adam. Are you gonna ever have any guys that call the show that have been taking this for a long time that haven't had any problems with PFS?
Well, since the podcast is for support of the men who have PFS, I don't see a reason why, A, I would need to do that, and B, why they would want to give their time, because it sounds like they have other things to worry about.
I'm not sure why people like Adam and I either would really want to, you know, encourage other people in that way to be taking the drug, to, you know, implicitly be encouraging it.
No,
but thanks for calling in, Eddie.
I listen to your podcast all the time, and I feel so horrible for all you guys, you know?
Thank you.
Well, you're lucky.
All right.
I'm happy.
When are you
going to
be on
take
again?
Care, man.
When is your show going
to
be on
I'd
again?
I'd like to know. Check the website. Thanks, Eddie.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, bye. All right, Michael. So you started taking the drug.
Right.
You said you were taking a reduced dose. What was the first thing there? When did you first notice side effects?
It's probably on the third or fourth day. The fourth day is when I decided to stop taking it. The side effects were almost all sexual in nature. Erectile dysfunction, lowered libido, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've realized that I was having similar experience that I was years earlier. And I just decided at that point, you know, listen, this is not worth it. It's not worth my continued risk to my health. I'm taking this. I'm not willing to trade my hair for you know, my long term sexual health. So I stopped taking it after 4 days.
And it sounds like so you stopped taking it. Did the side effects go away this time?
No, they did not go away. I should say first off that the sexual side effects mostly wore off in the subsequent weeks. I know a lot of guys who have post-finasteride syndrome. As you know, erectile dysfunction is one of the major symptoms. I do not have that symptom. It was something that I said, as I said, it happened in the early days of taking the drug, but it faded in the subsequent weeks. While the sexual problems mostly improved, what did happen in the next few weeks, probably maybe a week or 10 days after stopping taking the drug, I began to develop a very strange symptom, which was profuse, uncontrollable, localized sweating. The sweating mainly comes from the soles of my feet, the underside of my scrotum, and from my hands, although a little bit less severe in my hands than in the other two areas I mentioned. Those problems have continued until today. It's been, you know, it's over 4 years later now that I continue to experience this uncontrollable sweating. It's difficult to explain to someone who's never had this level of sweating before, But you know, I mean, everybody sweats, and most people don't really think much about it. But my sweating, I should say, as an example, is my sweating is so severe and so profuse that, let's say, within a few minutes of putting my socks and undergarments on in the morning, within a few minutes, both my socks and underwear are wet to the point of being soaked. It's incredibly, incredibly uncomfortable, and it makes any sort of movement very labored and profoundly, profoundly uncomfortable. So I began experiencing that over the next few months. As I said, the sexual problems mostly resolved. And this was in, as I said, it was December of 2010 that I took the drug that last time. It was actually between Christmas and New Year's of 2011. So over the next few early months of 2011, things as far as the sexual problems improved, but the sweating still continued in earnest. Fast forward to May of 2011, I had a pretty sudden drop off in my health, and I began to develop a series of new symptoms, or I developed a series of new symptoms. I developed a number of prostate issues. I started to get chronic prostatitis, which is a prostate infection. I developed pelvic floor dysfunction, which is a chronic tightening of the pelvic floor muscles. Around this time in May 2011, I also developed what's called a grade 2 left-sided varicocele. It's a varicose vein in one of my testicles. Not very pleasant looking. My body composition also changed pretty dramatically at this time. As anybody knows me knows, I've always been very thin, naturally very thin. But I developed pretty excessive amounts of stomach and waist fat during this time that, you know, no amount of dieting or exercise would get rid of. I also realized around the time that I was not able to put on any sort of muscle. Didn't matter how much weight I was lifting or what I was doing, putting muscle on became very difficult. And around that time too, in May 2011, when I've had this sudden drop off, my libido also dropped off the map. Pretty much, it had been improving in the months since I took the drug, but it dropped off the map almost completely in May 2011. And all of those problems—the prostate issues, the body composition, the libido, the sweating, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've all continued until today.
The weight gain is something that, man, I exercise every day. I was super skinny.
Right.
I was actually ripped before I took the drug. And, that's really frustrating. I feel that. I know a lot of guys have that same issue, Michael. So I'm with you on that. I can't lose the weight around my stomach and even on my back. It's weird.
It is weird. It's just, I just have an unhealthy diet. It's not even like I look like I have an unhealthy diet or I have a beer gut or something like that. It's more like just this very fundamental change in body composition. You know, it's like, it's almost this fat that almost goes all the way up to my chest. It is very strange and it's very frustrating. But, I guess I should continue on. For the next year or so, after May 2011, things stayed more or less the same. Actually, about the next year and a half or so, things stayed more or less the same. Fast forward to about November. Actually, I remember the exact date because it was Election Day, the general election here in the United States, November 5th, 2012. I had gone on medical leave from my job, the job that I had gotten in 2010, a few months prior. I'd really tried to focus on getting healthy, and I think in 2012 I spent about $15,000 out of pocket on medical expenses, just seeing doctors and really trying to do everything that I could to get better. At that point, the sweating was really the main issue, and the sweating had worsened over the years, and it had just become so hard to maintain a regular schedule. I was in such profound discomfort all the time. It was hard to shake.
Before we get to election day, where the doctor's visits, I know a lot of guys that call the show or email, they say they can't find a doctor that's sympathetic to the post-vanaxide syndrome. Were your doctors, at least, did they listen to you? Did they take it seriously? Or were they dismissive that finasteride could be the cause of such a wholesale change in your body chemistry?
Well, there were a couple doctors I saw in the early stages who just were kind of clueless about the whole situation and didn't really know what to make of me. It was hard to deny that I was having issues. You can see that I was sweating. It was obvious. But no one really knew what to make of it. I should say though that I do live, you know, living in New York City. I did have access to a lot of doctors, and pretty shortly after, I think in around April of 2011 or so, a few months after I first started developing problems, I began seeing Alan Jacobs, which most post-finasteride guys know. He's a doctor who's sympathetic to our condition, who works in New York, and I've been seeing him off and on for the last several years. And I was pretty, going forward, I didn't really want to waste my time with just taking chances on doctors, so I was usually pretty careful about researching doctors before I saw them. So I was, for the most part, I was seeing doctors who I already knew were sympathetic to our condition.
Mm. Okay, so let's go to election day, November 5th.
Yeah, and I had in the previous few months before that, I actually had, as I said, I went on medical leave for a few months. Things unfortunately got no better, and I decided that I just was not able to go back to my job in the shape that I was in. So I was forced to resign from that job that I'd gotten about the fall of 2012, late summer, early fall of 2012. It was really pretty heartbreaking for me, but I was not putting the sort of effort into my career that I know I needed to, and I just decided that I really needed to try to, you know, get myself back into a state of health where I could, you know, really put the kind of effort into it that I needed to. But anyway, so November 5th, 2012, I was a few months past having to resign from my job. I was doing some freelance work on my computer, and all of a sudden, all at once almost, I felt as if my cognitive functioning had dropped off. A lot of guys refer to these issues with cognitive functioning as brain fog. I think that's usually the colloquial term. But while I do understand the use of that term, and I do think it's accurate in a certain sense, I don't really think it paints a full picture of the sort of cognitive impairments that I'm feeling. I have had my... This was several years ago, and in the time since, I've had my cognition tested by several medical professionals. I've been shown to be severely, severely, severely lacking in a number of areas. My memory, including, you know, being able to recall and retain information, is you know, off the map low, well below that of an average person. My problem solving and comprehension, again, well below that of an average person. I lose my train of thought very easily. I have terrible focus and concentration. I'm just absolutely awful. This little sounds in the background just distract me from anything that I'm doing. It's really very frustrating because that's something I've never experienced before. I have terrible fluency now, so I have a hard time remembering the definitions of words, putting words together. I'm a terrible writer now. Or I shouldn't say I'm a terrible writer, but I it takes me forever to really put words together very coherently. And I don't know if it's obvious now, but compared to the way I spoke previously, my speech now is very labored, and my vocabulary is not what it once was. And you know, I was a book editor. You know, my words were my stock in trade, and I don't want to sound like claim that I was, you know, a Pulitzer Prize winner or anything like that, or a Nobel laureate, but I think I was better with words than most people were, but I just don't find that to be the case anymore. And my fluency has been tested, as I said, by several medical professionals as being, you know, well below that of an average person. So the cognitive symptoms cropped up, and again, I'm losing my train of thought here.
Okay. You're doing great.
Thank you. But I guess the way that I would describe the cognitive problems too, it's more, I know brain fog is usually a term that's used in psychological settings. My cognitive symptoms, though, have been more described to me as like akin to those of someone with low level or early stage Alzheimer's disease. So that's really what it's like for me. You know, my cognitive functioning is just not anywhere close to what it once was, and it now takes me, in my personal experience, it takes me about 4 times as long to do anything now than it once did. You know, editorial work, for instance, that used to take me 15 minutes, now takes me an hour. Stuff that used to take me an hour now takes me 4 hours. So that's it's made it very difficult to try to have any sort of income for myself. Anyway, we can get back to that, though. But around that same time, November 5th, 2012, around the time the cognitive symptoms developed, I also developed a series of other issues. None of them are as serious as the cognitive stuff, but there are others. I started to develop around that time bilateral thyroid nodules, so basically two solid bumps in my thyroid. Wasn't really a big deal at first. It felt like just a fullness in my throat. But over the years, the nodules have been growing and expanding farther and farther into my throat. And it's getting to the point now where it's beginning to affect my swallowing. If it gets any worse, it's going to start even more badly affecting my swallowing and even my breathing. So that's certainly very concerning. There aren't a whole lot of good treatments available for thyroid nodules other than basically getting your whole thyroid removed, which is not really a road that I want to go down if I don't have to.
No.
I mean,
right.
Having to go on medication the rest of my life, and I don't know if it's been your experience, but I don't really respond to a lot of medications the same way that other people do. I know I have to take much higher doses of medications than most people do, so I'm just concerned about having to rely on medication for that the rest of my life, you know, getting a vital organ taken out like that. Mm-hmm. I'm also, I have borderline hypothyroidism, so an underactive thyroid. I have terrible urinary urgency. Basically, I feel like I have to go to the bathroom. I have to urinate all the time, and when I have to go, it's very urgent. It becomes a real major issue. It's like I feel like an old person, you know, an old guy with an enlarged prostate, basically. What else? I think that's about it. Oh, I also have a condition called Chilblains syndrome. It's a rheumatoid condition. It actually put me in the emergency room last year, but it involves a chronic narrowing in the cold weather months of the capillaries in my toes. Basically, it cuts off blood flow to my toes and causes me to break out in all these sores and causes my skin to become beet red and very sensitive. Fortunately, I have been able to get treatment for that through some medication, although it's still a little bit of a problem, but I have been able to get mostly treated. So, all of that, all these issues that I've mentioned, stuff dating all the way back to 2010, stuff that developed in 2012, all that stuff still affects me today. Eventually I had to move away from New York and move in. You know, I had my own apartment. I was leasing an apartment in New York. I had a roommate. It was a really good situation for me. I was really enjoying my life at that time. As I said, my job and, you know, my everything else about living in New York, I've had to give that up. I now live in Connecticut with my mother. Mm-hmm. You know, I can barely work. I do a little bit of freelance work, but as I mentioned earlier, I've had to give up most of my freelance jobs. I used to do freelance work for Random House, which is a major publisher, as most people know. Several mm-hmm. other publishers in New York I did work for, but that work became way too challenging for me when the cognitive symptoms hit. So I had to give most of that up. I managed to hold on to basically one of these freelance jobs. However, as I said earlier, it takes me 4 times as long to do everything now. and the quality of my work is not anywhere close to what it once was. So basically, on a good day, a very good day, I make about $30. That's pretty much, it takes me about maybe 6 hours or so to make $30. So I can't work in any specific capacity. You know, that money is enough for me to basically pay for my groceries, my food, make minimum payments on my student loans, credit cards, stuff like that. But I'm completely unable to support myself otherwise. I can't.
Period as well.
Sorry,
man. I had to move back in after traveling the world, living in China for 2 years. You know, teaching in all around the world. I had to move back in with my parents. I was 35, 36 at the time. So I know how it feels. I know where you're at.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's very, of course there's nothing, I feel stupid sometimes feeling bad about it because I'm disabled at this point. You know, I mean, there's no way around that. So of course I can't support myself, but still there is a part of me that finds it very demeaning, you know.
It's incredibly demeaning. I mean, it's the frustrating thing for me, Michael, and I've had, you know, your 30th or 31st guest I've had on, is that nobody was a, you know, a low achiever in life. All the guys I've had on were lawyers or like you had a great job in New York City. They all were high achieving guys. This isn't a group of men that you know, were kind of slackers, and it's taken them great men from America, basically taken them out of society and made them useless and made them less of than what they are. So that's what's crazy to me, is that it's cutting a swath of men out of white collar America.
It really is. I've noticed that listening to your show too, and just spending time on Propecia Help, you know, the website we all know.
Right.
Just the number of people who really had a good life going for themselves. And as you said, just kind of we're taken off at the knees, had their lives taken off at the knees because of all of this. But I agree, it is striking in that regard. I can't, just to finish up, I can't work. I can't even read books anymore. So I was a book editor. I love reading. Obviously, I can't even read books anymore. I can't really read any sort of long-form narrative. I do read the newspaper a little bit every day, but I forget almost everything that I read. I can't even follow movies. I've had to turn now to the only option that I really have now is, and I alluded to this earlier, I think, I'm filing for disability here in Connecticut, in my home state. There's really not much else that I can do. I really can't support myself. It's making very little money every day. I believe that I'm disabled. My doctors believe that I'm disabled. It's just a question of, you know, convincing the state. It's just, you know, this is not a pleasant thing for me. Even if I were to be granted disability, this would not be, you know, not be a happy thing. What else can I really do at this point?
Right. I asked a personal question because I know a lot of guys go through a suicidal stage. You know, mine lasted 2 years, you know, where every day, I had thoughts of suicide. And I will say, I don't know if you're there or you've been in that stage. It got better for me that I've come out of that stage. So if you're listening to the show, hang in there. Don't kill yourself. Don't hurt yourself. Don't do anything. I do think there's help coming, and it's coming in the form of research and more money to the PFS Foundation. Have you gone through a stage like that? Do you have any words of wisdom or any? Are you still in that stage and just kind of looking to get out of that stage? Where are you in regards to that?
I agree. And it's as you know, we've lost a number of guys from our community,
right,
to suicide. And that's just, you know, there's nothing, I can't imagine anything sadder than that and more tragic than that. I really have not. Was I depressed in the early going? Yeah, of course. Especially when I had just started a new job and all of that, and just moved to a new city. I was really depressed. But I never let it get to suicide. Maybe it's just because I've always had pretty strong willpower. I just refuse to let this beat me. You know, I'm just not gonna give in to this. I mean, my life is. I don't say this to be negative. I just say this as a realist. My life is miserable right now. It's just terrible. But I am not going to let this beat me. It's not, you know, if I were to end things for myself, I'd be letting this drug company, Merck, I'd be letting this drug, Propecia, beat me, and it's just not going to happen. You know, I'm gonna keep fighting.
Amen, brother. Do you have anything you put your hope on? I mean, are you hopeful in that the research that this could be fixed? In talking to Dr. Jacobs, have any of the doctors you've talked to expressed hope that this is a treatable condition once the kind of the mechanism of it is understood?
Well, I mean, if you look at what our community, through the efforts of really maybe a handful of people or so, have been able to accomplish over the last several years. I mean, we went from being, when were you, if you don't mind my asking, Adam, when did you,
yeah.
I think it was 2011 you first got sick or so? Was that around the time?
The first time I found Propecia Help was when my penis went numb. I Googled general numbness, and it took me to Propecia Help. And that's, so yeah, 2011. So three, 4 years. But you're right. It's amazing where we've come from. We're mainstream now. We've got research on our side. So, yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, in 2000, I got sick about the same time as you did, late 2010, early 2011 for me. We were basically a bunch of, from the outside, I'm sure we looked like a bunch of crazies on a message board, a bunch of conspiracy theorists. But, through the efforts of, several guys like us, through the efforts of Dr. John Sandman, who's, is the founder of the post-finasteride syndrome, who, had an absolutely tragic loss of his own. We went from being a bunch of conspiracy theorists on a little message board on a deep corner of the internet to having our condition studied at Harvard, at Baylor, University of Milan. I know there are other universities looking into
this, to
our issue now. I mean,
far from me is looking into it. So,
what's that?
There's. I said I know of at least one more that I don't think anyone really knows about that's close to me in Chicago that's looking into it. So
I know which one you're talking about, but I'm not. We're not allowed to talk about.
Yeah,
it,
we won't talk about it. But
it's just we have some of the best medical minds in the world looking at our condition. So sure. I mean, I can find hope in that. There are lots of medical conditions, lots of diseases that have been around decades longer than ours that aren't getting the sort of attention that ours has gotten. So sure, I'm hopeful about that. Does that really, does that help me day to day? Not really, but it's certainly something that I suppose it is something that I can look toward and know that we are moving in the right direction, that we do have this momentum now, and it's hard to imagine that, this momentum is going to cease as far as we've gotten at this point.
I agree, and I don't ask this of everyone, but I think I would like to hear your answer. If you knew Merck was listening, and I suspect they may at some point, what would you like to say to them?
Well,
that you can repeat on air, I guess. Is there anything, that you...
I don't know if we're regulated by the FCC here, but I don't want to commit any FCC violations.
Understandable.
Yeah, I honestly don't think that I would say anything. All you have to do is, all I would encourage people to do is look at the history of Merck. We are not the first people who have been struck down by this drug company. Everybody. The example that most people know is Vioxx, which killed, not just made people sick, it killed. It struck them down with heart attacks. It stopped people's hearts.
Yep.
and
Merck never
apologized
for that. They never admitted wrongdoing. So
they're still fighting the lawsuits today. Just recently, a lawsuit was settled in Australia. Oh God, it's so disgusting to talk about. But I follow a lot of the happenings with Merck fairly closely. But they just settled with, I think, a few hundred people in Australia, maybe about 500 people or so, who all had heart attacks after taking Vioxx in, I think it was around 2005 or so, somewhere in there. I might be off by a couple of years, but I know it was in halfway through the first decade of the century. They settled with a bunch of people in Australia, which was unusual, given that they had mostly fought tooth and nail all these lawsuits. But it becomes becomes even more disturbing when you look at what they settled for. Basically, everyone got about $5,000.
Right.
So these people had heart attacks, and they got $5,000 for their troubles. So a lot of people died, and the families got $5,000, which is obviously just pitiful, disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, you look at so Vioxx is really the big one. I mean, I think the FCC estimated that the FDA estimated that Vioxx killed about 50,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the size of cities it killed.
Right.
I've read some other speculation and from some I think it was from a medical journalist or something. I read an article a few years ago that posited that Vioxx may have actually killed about 500,000 people.
That's what I've read too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it looked at some of the population rates of the last few years and noted that the years Vioxx was on the market, the death rate was about 500,000 people higher than it usually is.
The death rate due to heart attacks.
That's what it was. Yeah, that's what it was. Right. Yeah, is even more specific.
I think I want to be clear because, Michael, we're talking about this, and I know yesterday we did a show, and I got some feedback. I got an email, and I got some stuff online, people saying that I'm just chasing a lawsuit. And I want to be – and I'm not speaking for you. I just want to be clear. I have two things to say. First of all, in 2004, I had a surgery done that went terribly wrong, and there was some lasting damage to my muscles in my body. And easily could have sued because it was malpractice, and I didn't because you made a mistake, and I just chose not to sue. It's not in my nature. And secondly, to be upfront, I am involved in the lawsuit, but only as far as to get Merck to find a cure for this. And I think we talked about this yesterday with Kyle, and I'm sure you would agree. My main purpose in pursuing this lawsuit is not, well, it's justice, but it's more so to get this fixed. I don't need the money. I don't want the money. In fact, to me, it's blood money. And
right.
I don't want it. I just want them to fix it. So.
Yeah, I am.
Sorry.
By the way, I am not involved in the lawsuit. I am not involved in the lawsuit. So I have no vested interest in any of this.
Right.
You know, I wasn't going to get into this, but like back in my late teenage years, you know, like almost a decade before I ever had any issues with Propecia, with PFS. I had brief anxiety issues, like, in my late teenage years, and that's why I was on an antidepressant, like, literally for maybe 5 days or so. So that eliminates me from being in the lawsuit. If someone wants to say that, you know, I'm just anxious now, that these problems from 10 years ago have reoccurred, you know, I mean, okay, but it doesn't really add up, and all of my doctors would disagree with that logic.
Right.
That
I agree.
Lack thereof. But anyway, the point is that I'm not involved in the lawsuit. I'm really just speaking from the heart here. I'm speaking from what I know. So I would just encourage anyone to just look up the history of Merck. It's not just Vioxx. There's a drug called Januvia, which causes people pancreatic cancer, allegedly causes people pancreatic cancer. There's a drug called Fosamax, which is an osteoporosis drug, which actually has the kind of perverse effect of splitting people's jaw bones. You know, there's NuvaRing, which is a female contraceptive, which I think that's also – that wasn't cancer. Actually, yeah, NuvaRing caused pulmonary
blood clot
embolisms and have killed a number of women. So,
well, young women too.
Yeah, exactly. People who are similar age, women who are similar age of us. So I would say I don't think Merck is really – it's not worth my time thinking about, you know, delivering a message to them. They're a multi-billion-dollar corporate pharmaceutical industry that doesn't really care about you know, people like you and me. I wouldn't bother with them, but I would just encourage people to look at the history and really consider strongly about ever taking any of their medications.
Right. Well, Michael, your story is good. It's powerful. Unfortunately, it's very common. I mean, most of the guys I've had on have, I've had similar stories. Do you have any words that for this, you know, this goes on to the Internet Archives, men that might stumble upon? Do you have anything you want to say to guys that are in the depths of kind of despair that might help them get through that?
You know, keep, as I said before, I think, you know, you have to keep fighting. You know, you're going to let this drug company that, you know, the only goal of which is profiting off of you to beat you. You know, don't let it happen. Don't allow yourself to be beaten by this company who is just interested in making money off of you, doesn't really care about your health. Just had a cash cow, and a hair loss drug, and all they wanted to do was make as much money off of it as it could. You know, probably, allegedly, you know, probably ignoring the risks to the population of guys who are taking it.
Yeah.
Don't let this you know, depraved, moralist, it's not really a word, but, you know, a company that has the absence of morality beats you, because it's, you know, they're not worth it. So just keep fighting. You have to keep fighting every day. Don't let this beat you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for those words. I'll take them to the heart, and I hope the guys listening take them to the heart and hang in there in your own personal day-to-day life. And I know you're going to improve. I know I have. So thanks for sharing, and God bless, and good luck, man.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, too, for doing this radio show. I think you're doing a great service to all of us, so thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye. Bye.
So, again, I want to thank Michael for sharing his story. If you've listened to this story and you feel that it's similar to yours and you would like to offer your story to the podcast, let me know. Give me a call, and we will we'll have you on. It's very easy to do, and it's powerful, and it's helpful to the men that are going through this. So, you know, the number to call is on the website. You can email me, pfsglobalpodcast@gmail.com. That's pfsglobalpodcast@gmail.com. And again, hang in there. Hope is there for us. It's on our side. Like Michael said, we have momentum now. I don't think it's going to stop. We've got research on our side, so we'll figure this out. We'll get to the bottom of this, and we'll hopefully get our lives back with some time left on this earth before we pass on. So, you know, hang in there, guys. I love you, each and every one of you. I know what you're going through, and God bless, man, and please reach out to me if you want to talk. I've been to hell and back, man. I stared down I stared down the darkness, the depths of hell, and I turned around and I came back, and I've made something of this life, you know, what's left of it. And I found a woman that loves me for, you know, with my condition, and I know you can find happiness, you know, even though it'll be muted, it'll be less than what it was before, it'll be some sort of, you know, weakened form, but happiness can exist. I think accepting that you won't be the same was part of the battle for me. I realized that, in essence, the old guy is dead. The old Adam is dead. This is not the same guy. It's not the same body. It's not the same chemistry. It's not the same person. Realize that, accept it, own it, and you can live with this. So that's what I encourage each of you to do. And like I said, God bless, good luck, and reach out to someone if you're struggling right now, because we've all been there, and we've made it through that part of this condition. So I'll let you know when the next show is on. Check the website for information. And until next time, stay strong.
Thank you for listening to the PFS Global Support Podcast. This independent production is for PFS victims and their families. You can reach the program via email at pfsglobalpodcast@gmail.com. Donations for PFS research can be made to the PFS Foundation at their website, pfsfoundation.org. Again, thank you for listening to this week's PFS Global Support Podcast.